Good afternoon, my beloved brothers and sisters on this beautiful and fragile blue planet we call Earth. And welcome, welcome to my world. We'd like to thank JP, Skype, Monster Stream. Blog Talk Radio has a problem today, so we couldn't do the show through Blog Talk Radio, which is no big deal for me. So today we have a lovely guest named Vinny Eastwood. Vinny is a longtime radio host, and get your pencil and paper handy because you're going to write down a lot of things today, I got a feeling. Vinny, step in here, step up in the soapbox and step into the spotlight and say hi.
Hello. Is it the soapbox because we all need a bit more cleaning? Oh, no, no, wait. I think we're all brainwashed enough. Something tells me...
We're getting a little bit of...
Can you hear me at all?
I can hear you.
All right. Well, let's see if we can break this down here. I'll introduce myself so that those who are unfamiliar with me may get into the fold. Let me put it this way. People trust me enough that after listening to half of one of my shows, they bought me a $3,500 iMac so that I can continue to make my TV show. That is the level that I'm operating at. I'm 26 years old, and I've only been on talk radio with my own show for a year. I'm at the very start of my career, and I've already had George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM, who has anywhere between 29 and 39 million listeners a night on Coast to Coast AM, same network that carries Rush Limbaugh on my show. I've been added to G. Edward Griffin's prestigious Hall of Honor. I've made the top 12 on that list, includes Sheriff Richard Mack, Catherine Austin Fitz, Alex Jones, G. Edward Griffin himself, and many, many more. I've started up a website called guerrillamedia.co.nz, and if you go there and you are an activist, you have a website of your own kind or a YouTube channel or something of that description, a radio show for example, for free I will put up a little banner down the side with all our collaborators and give you a contributor account so that you can post your articles, your radio shows, and your videos to this central feed at Guerrilla Media. The idea is that if you centralize all of the activists' commentary, you can wind up having a lot of information easily accessible with everybody doing, well, basically, very little posting. And you get a broad range of opinions. And more to the point, it brings to the forefront those who often in our community spend their lives researching and fighting for the rights of other people in local government politics, economic policy, eugenics, child kidnapping, etc., who are never given a platform to any great extent, and if they are, they are demonized and laughed at. Now, I seek to change that because I don't know about you guys, but I've kind of lost faith in the system because, frankly, I believe now that wholeheartedly, and I think you might be foolish to believe otherwise, that the entire system inexorably is against the average person getting ahead. Okay? That's the way
you
the system works.
You could not be more correct. You could not be more correct in your thought, Vinny.
There is no way to win someone else's rigged game, unless you cheat. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the whole idea of cheating the system comes through ideas. And the only way that you can spread and permeate ideas to any great effect is through major media outlets. Now, currently, the major media outlets are hemorrhaging money like there's no friggin' tomorrow. MediaWorks, TV3 network here in New Zealand, owes Radio New Zealand, the National Broadcasting Network Standards Authority, $43 million in unpaid radio licensing fees because of a, quote, lack of advertising revenue. And you know why they aren't getting those advertising dollars? Because A, people don't give a crap about the products that they're selling anyway because they're all establishment crapola regardless. And B, they don't even care or listen to mainstream media anymore. Recent reports have come out that on primetime television, on news, okay, Chuck Norris's Total Gym infomercial has higher ratings than the mainstream media news channels in the United States. I kid you not. These people are going down. They know they're going down. And I say that if the media won't do their job, don't fight them. Just replace them, because they're no longer relevant. All of those people that you wind up going out and interviewing, for example, politicians, business leaders, people of that ilk who have club loyalties or employment issues, conflicts of interest, things of a nature that means that they won't be able to answer certain questions. Now, if you're wanting to get to the truth, you really want answers to pretty much every question you can think of, don't you? The problem becomes, of course, that when we talk about these things that we know, the only people that know what they're talking about are the ones who live it. These people in these suits in the parliament, they don't live on the streets. They don't go to the council meetings and stand up and get dragged out of them by frickin' thugs just for filming public meetings like I have. You know? Seriously, these people don't know what they're on about. Who better to be the pundits for the people than the activists themselves who put their lives on the line for their people, for their communities? Those are the opinions that I believe need to be heard throughout the entire world. And I do not frickin' discriminate. Actually, that's a lie. Well, hell, I do. I discriminate. I need everybody to come on my show. All right? That's the level of my discrimination. Because everybody finds a purpose.
You and I share that thought, Dan.
Everybody shares a purpose, you know. Like, we've got to come together on the points that we agree. And let's just ignore those little things that we disagree about for the moment, all right? Because let's face facts here. Is another 9/11 truther who disagrees with you about climate change as likely to kill you as the people who made 9/11 an inside job? No. So, think about priority of safety. The whole idea of a new world order is one global government run by elite banksters who own all the media to brainwash everybody, who own all the medical industry to drug everybody, who own all the big agribusiness and everything to feed everybody or starve everybody. You know, they own everything. They got all the judges in their back pocket, as George Carlin said. So what do you think? Some election's going to save you?
No! You need to have a revolution in the media before you can have a revolution in the mind. And that's what I want to do with my radio show at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
And I'm getting some major feedback here, guys.
Yeah, we noticed that.
Sorry about that. My fault.
Can it be fixed?
I'm just... Yeah, yes, I've just taken it off.
All right, fantastic.
Sorry about that.
Well, anyway, my radio show is 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 till 7 Central Standard Time for those of you who are listening in the Texas area, and it's 11 till 1 a.m. For those of you in the Uber Kingdom under the Saxe-Coburg government, and also it's 10 a.m. till midday here at home in New Zealand, the what I like to call the island chained nation and the slave South Pacific from the fluoridated capital of Auckland. And I love it, man. It's great. Because you've got to maintain a sense of humour in these chaotic times, because otherwise, you'll go friggin' nuts! It's the lighter
then
side
you
gotta of
listen.
Side.
You got to listen in to my shoot. You get Vinny?
Yeah?
You got to listen in next Saturday. I'm having a lady named Gwen Caldwell on. And she's going to have information there that's going to blow your mind.
Everything blows my mind. It's like a daily thing, bro.
Say again?
Everything blows my mind lately. Have you noticed that? Like,
yeah.
Get this, bro. I've been given a megaphone. One of my listeners bought me a megaphone. Another one of my listeners bought me a... There's a big list here. I've got to rattle them off. You know, another listener bought me like a $3,000 freaking Mac so I can do my TV show. Another listener and activist built this big 3 meter wide banner and paid like all this money to get these laminated photos of chemtrails and stuff all over it with my website and stuff. It's freaking beautiful. And oh mate, seriously, the hits on the website are just skyrocketing. Within the last 2 weeks, I've just kind of been shooting into the stratosphere, and it's interesting. Stratosphere has the word fear in it because my great fear, really, with success, as everybody should fear, is that I'd turn into some form of dick. Well, anyway, like I was saying, lots of real cool big things have been happening with the show and with the website and with all the YouTube channels and that kind of stuff. And basically, I'm just afraid that if it'll all go to my head, you know, and I'll turn into some form of ass who like thinks of himself way better than everyone, and I'll forget what I originally started this idea from, was it that it's not about me. It really is about everybody together, and it's like all of these activists out there, they can't broadcast them worth a dang, you know. They can't run a radio show. They don't possess that talent. They don't possess that skill. They don't know how to edit a video worth a damn. They don't know how to upload them. They don't know how to do anything in terms of promoting themselves, okay? And they're so humble that they refuse to promote themselves, even when their message is absolutely essential for everybody to know. Me, on the other hand, I was conveniently born without a sense of shame. And I was top of the boards when I was doing telesales for some time, about 6 months, actually. And for a period of that, I had a 50% strike rate. For every second person that picked up that phone, they would sell what I was selling them, you know? And it becomes about trying to go on and give these people the coverage that they deserve, okay? I can make films, I can upload stuff to YouTube, I can turn up and film public events. In fact, this is what I've been doing for the last 3 years. It's precisely what I'm just telling you now. You've got to go out there, turn up to your public meetings, film them, and then upload them. There's plenty of people out there who do frickin' heaps of filming at public meetings, but they never upload them. It's almost like a frickin' waste of time, because if it's not available online, the ability of that information to get out gets crushed. People's memory fades very quickly. Video doesn't lie, and video doesn't die. When you get on camera, us ambushing Helen Clark, the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, who is now the third highest level person at the United Nations, with a $9 million annual salary and a $9 billion budget, mostly for toxic vaccines to dispense in the third world countries, which is a similar protocol that's followed here in New Zealand swiftly after her election, by the way. Anyway, when we asked her if the UN might be a tool for world government, you ever seen that TV show Lie to Me, how people have got these tics, you know, and then they look up and to the left and then they smile and they look down, you know, it's an obvious giveaway that they're lying to you? Yep. She displayed all of those tics. And if nobody else actually had bothered to do that, you know, it just wouldn't exist. And I realized something that day, that every single person who gets out there just takes the frickin' initiative to go up to one of these famous people or one of these somebody out there comes up with the initiative to go out there and ask a question of a politician that's a hard question or a celebrity or something like that, anybody who's pushing some kind of globalist agenda, stick a camera in their face, ask them a tough question, take the initiative. Okay, that's why I keep telling people, man, don't wait for me to tell you what to do. Take the initiative yourself, because there's nobody else that can do it in that situation but you. You don't need anybody's approval. You don't need anybody's permission. You're not going to get arrested for walking up and asking one question with a camera and then getting a quick response and walking off if you're scared or anything. You're going to be sweet, mate. And when you upload that stuff to YouTube, it's freaking priceless and people will love it. And they do. Thousands upon thousands of people watch these We Are Change confrontations with people like Dr. Oz and whatnot. Alright? You have the opportunity now in your city. Pretty probably at this moment. There's probably some description of globalist out there who's at a public meeting at some point who you can go up and ask a question of and film. I say take the opportunity, because they will never miss an opportunity to screw you over and lie to you. So you should never miss an opportunity to expose them. You've got to use the weapons of the enemy against them. They created all these internet social networking sites to surveil everybody, but now what they're surveilling is a whole bunch of people that are saying these frickin' people are surveilling us. You know? Well, people, scum, filth, villains, whatever you want to call the New World Order assorted globalist recycled trash. It doesn't really matter.
You sound like you're a very enthusiastic kind of person, which is probably how you got the media sales, the TV telesales and things in the first. I mean, you sound like a very cheerful and amiable kind of guy. But that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I find it hard to make enemies. People make themselves my enemies rather than me making them my enemy kind of thing. I'm always very nice and kind and honest and gentle and loving and whatever, but occasionally, and I've started to find this out more recently as you kind of start becoming some sort of a name on YouTube, people think that you're all of a sudden a different person and therefore you're an Israeli asset. And I'm not kidding. People have accused me of being an Israeli asset because of what I'm doing. It's like, man, they don't spend 16 hours a day editing audio archives and uploading videos and writing content and talking to business brokers and all of this kind of stuff and working every single angle and going out in a million different directions each day and just absolutely hammering all the social network. There's a hell of a lot of work, a hell of a lot of work that has to go into doing anything of significance. And my personal belief is that I've got the time and I've got the ability to do it, and the people of my country particularly need me. And it's incredibly apparent that they need me because people are coming out of the woodwork to support me. And it's really humbling because it's kind of like, you ever get abused as a kid? I did, and by you know, fellow classmates and stuff like that. You know, I was overweight, and everybody would be verbally abusive to me. It was a pretty miserable existence, you know, for a lot of
people. Tell me all about it.
Oh, yeah. And it was kind of like my final year of school, and I'd finally thought I'd, you know, gotten something done. You know, I was head of the prom committee, and I came up with a theme of the prom, the snowball. I organized all the decorations to be made and that kind of thing. And sure enough, the prom was a huge smash hit, great success, you know, got in the school paper and all that kind of stuff. And then the assembly hall, you know, when they call all the kids into the big auditorium and the principal gives a speech and whatever, and they commented on how great the prom was. And at the time, there was only about maybe 34 people in the seventh form. That was the last year of school with me. And they called out 33 names, and they left one name out.
Oh,
and that was the first day that I drank vodka at school. And I was angry, man. I was angry, and it was just like, when you put a whole lot of effort in, you want to see recognition in order to want to keep doing it. And it was kind of at that point that I realized that school wasn't worth doing. And the same thing happened, and a similar instance happened to me in university as well. I put a huge amount of effort into this big anti-television essay saying that television was dangerous because it possessed large amounts of brainwashing capacity and it produces a shorter memory span of about 30 seconds because they have the and now this phenomenon where each and every news story will be followed by one that's adjacent and completely irrelevant, and it erases the memory of the previous story that you've gotten into. And I read through many books and I referenced it, and I got all of these arguments to support my claim, and they gave me a D.
No.
And this was the first essay that I'd ever really poured my heart. I had never done that kind of research or that. I had never done even referencing before in my life, and I'd been passing my grades and stuff. But this was the first time that I ever really wanted to say something and tried to back it up and do the right thing. It's unbelievable. And the betrayal continued through to the work life. Now, this is the thing. If you give a flying F, if you are trying to do something important and be strong and independent and get anything done, there will be people pouring out of the pores of this world to bring you down with them. Seriously. Seriously, man, you will find yourself amidst a den of thieves and wolves and scum in every room that you walk into, in the corporate world, the business world, the political world, the media world. It's all full to the brim with basic scum when it comes down to it. Okay, and this is why so many activists become basically so isolated, is because they've realized precisely as I do that the entire system is a fraud, and all the people that are currently participating in it, whether or not they realize it, are also frauds and cannot be trusted, especially mainstream media, especially politicians, and especially business PR reps.
You're absolutely right. Vinny, you were a black sheep. We're all black sheep, and, you know, Dave is 70 and I'm 50, and we know exactly where you're at with that story, and it's just about now, it's only now, that we're able to have a voice of our own. And so welcome to the flock of black sheep.
Yeah, I've always been the black sheep of the family. I remember my brother told me one time, I asked him, you know, look.
You're on a delay, Dave.
And I live in a country of 40 million sheep and 1 million people, or if you want to be technical, just 41 million sheep.
Sheep, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. All right, I love you, New Zealand. I love you. You know I do. You know.
No. I love Kiwis, and I love, you know, obviously I'm not from Scotland. I love Scots, and yes, there are an awful lot of sheep around here, and they're my nearest neighbours, indeed.
Yeah. It's always the people that are closest to you, you know. Oh. my sister one time, she's pregnant, right, and. She's eating this white bread, you know, and I said to her, hey, do you know that they bleached the flour? And she goes, look, I'm perfectly happy in my cushion of ignorance. I don't want you to tell me.
Very good.
Oh, man.
That's a good one.
Oh, but you know, what I said to her after that was really nasty, though, man. I just called her a slave scum, and, you know, I just kind of laid into her, and... I kind of caused a scene, and it was the thing, and I realized how shameful my behavior was, how this kind of this violent reaction just comes out of somebody just wanting to be ignorant, and I think to myself, man, you can't force people to think a certain way. You can only you can only nudge them in the right direction, and when it comes down to a confrontation. on an intellectual basis where the confrontation is no longer intellectual, where it stops being a this is how I feel and these are the facts of the matter, and that person listens to you and then they express their opinion and tell some adjacent facts so that you can both reach a conclusion together. Instead it becomes, you think this particular way because of such and such a reason. And they reply by, well, you're just saying that because you think such and such a way because of another particular reason.
and you realize
that you're not having a conversation at all. It's just two people expressing their opinion of two people, not two people expressing their opinion of each other.
That's right. It gets down to screw off, you big nose freak.
or getting smacked in the frickin' jaw.
That's next.
Vinny, have you talked to my son Steve lately? I wonder.
Well, no. And this is the thing. Family are the ones that it happens to. You ever hear that old phrase of you always hurt the one you love? Works both ways, as I say in Fight Club. And the commonality that I've found is people become, they realize that the New World Order exists. They realize all these poisons are in our environment, and they don't rest until everybody around them realizes it. Now, this is the incorrect way to do it. Now, coming from the sales world and having a 50% strike rate for some period of time, I feel that I can actually comment on how to effectively convince somebody to you know, buy what you're selling them. Whatever the product may be, whether it's truth, justice, or whether it's family values or whatever, there are particular ways of selling things without getting yourself depressed and worked up about it. Okay? Because let's face facts here. The world has gone to the dogs, and particularly people have become very rude. A lot of people have become very rude. There's plenty of polite people out there, but for some reason, it's the 1% of just a-holes out there that really shatter the rest of them. Or maybe 4% or so. Apparently, there's 4% clinically diagnosed psychopaths in society, according to Thomas Sheridan. And, I probably say that would comprise of almost all the members of the Council on Foreign Relations. But anyway, I think that when it comes down to it, the opportunity that everybody has each and every day to make a difference has to be seized. You know why? Because there's only one moment that you get to do it, and it's this moment. And you see, it's continuous. Whenever you say this moment, it's still the same one. And it's been that way all throughout history. Okay? So what are you going to do about it? You got only this moment and this moment only to do something. Okay, I figured out that the mainstream media was completely corrupt, and I figured out that I wanted to do radio and get into media and all of that kind of stuff, so I just frickin' did it, you know? I had to distract myself with many jobs and tried to make money and blah, 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 here and there, or tried to get this skill, or tried to go to university, all of these other things that other people were telling me what to do. I wasn't doing what I was telling myself to do. I wasn't doing what I was passionate about. I learned some other skills along the way, and quite frankly, you know, very valuable. Because as long as you learn some skills along whatever frickin' journey you take, then it's actually worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what the path is about. You learn all the bits and you realize that everything, not even the times when you thought you made a failure and you thought, oh, I'll just go to this cafe, and you picked up a magazine and in the magazine was an article about a subject and you went into that subject, and if it wasn't for the failure that you'd made to make you go to the cafe in the first place, you wouldn't have picked up that skill or that bit of knowledge. Everything. You know, it's like we get this phrase, you know, it's all good. You know, even the bad stuff is all good because it pushes you to become good. And that's what we're all here for, is to realize that everything that our lives is pushing us away from is pushing us away from it so that we can move towards the right thing.
I've noticed in my 70 years on this earth that I'm very early indigo, being as I was born in 1941. And I've always questioned things. And I used to drive my mother and dad crazy. And my dad used to beat the hell out of me because I'd ask questions. And as I have found through my journey in life, I spent 10 years, according to one set of documents, and 16, according to another set of documents, in the military. Went to college, got 5 degrees. Also, when I was working for the telephone company, right after I got out of the service, I learned how to become a disc jockey. And then I went into independent consulting, and I did telephone systems and satellite stations all over the world. And I have never been as happy or content doing what I'm doing since I retired 12 years ago, almost be 13 years in December. And since I started doing this radio show, I have found what I was meant to do in life. And I like it because it's laid back. I don't have any particular agenda outside of to get information out for people to research and make up their own minds.
Yeah, well, I suppose I get into like a lot of really strange topics and guests on my show. And my argument is, well, everything I believe to be true is probably wrong, and I just haven't seen I just haven't seen all the evidence yet, you know. So just, you know, if somebody's got copious quantities of evidence, I'll change my mind. I'll change all my beliefs. But if somebody's just, you know, brainwashing me or giving me kind of party lines and rhetoric and stuff like that, it's just easy to see through. Because here's the thing. Have you ever had a conversation with a fantasist before? You know, somebody who says that, oh man, I used to hang out with Jimi Hendrix, bro. He used to buy weed off me, bro. You know that kind of person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And a politician's not entirely different from a fantasist. The way that you can tell a fantasist is a fantasist is you ask them to reveal a singular detail about their agenda. For example, a person's claiming to have sold weed to Jimi Hendrix, you say, exactly how much did Jimmy want? You know, how much weed did he want? He goes, oh, and he just make it, and what they do is they just start making another claim, or they repeat the same claim, claim that you don't believe their claim. You know, they try to play freaking mind games with you. Yeah, see, it comes down... It's like the Occam's razor of telling the truth. And this is what I talk about when you shove a camera in a politician's face and ask a tough question. Here's the result. You get 1 of 3 typical results. First one, they dodge the question, which means they're dodgy. 2, they lie about it, which means they're dodgy. Or 3, they tell the truth, which means potentially you can trust them and their information is accurate.
Or they're giving you disinformation.
Well, that's...
They're telling you the truth, and then they'll tell you a lie, and then they tell you the truth.
Well, disinformation is a lie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that falls into the same category, because nobody would classify... Like, let's say there was a spectrum, and good intel was on one end, and total fallacy was on the other end. Upon which in the spectrum would you place disinfo?
Well, it's kind of a little way across, because disinfo is they give you something that's true, or they say something nice about you. I mean, on a personal level, you get somebody who comes up to you and says, oh, wow, what a great T-shirt you're wearing, mate. And you think, oh, thank you, that's a nice person. And then they have a little dig. Oh, look at that, you know, you've got funny teeth, haven't you? And then they've got you, because you believed them the first time. You then believe them the second time, and it goes beyond your ability to think that fast to realize that they've just pulled one on you, and that's what I mean by disinformation.
Oh,
that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a mind manipulation kind of thing.
Well, you know, and that's why I operate under that assumption that everything I believe to be true is probably wrong. Because it's when you tie yourself up with concepts blindly that you wind up leading yourself into trouble, you know. And I've had truthers and patriots, you know, people that I've respected and had on my radio show text me in the middle of the night saying, Vinny, I think you're quote, you know, this is the text. Vinny, I think you're an effing spy. And I And I was like, obviously, I send them the text back, WTF, question mark, lol.
Yeah. What have they been smoking that night? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he texts me back, F you, a-hole. And he actually spelled out the words, yes. So this as soon as somebody gets aggressive with me and has absolutely no evidence and accuses me of something, then they instantly have no credibility for me, and I'll never bring them on my radio show again.
Mm.
Okay, it's as simple as that. If they obviously don't do any research because they're accusing me of something that's not true, then why would I want them to be speaking to an audience and telling them disinformation?
That's right.
Okay,
you get your platform until you betray it, but.
I choose to give people the benefit of the doubt, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll go up and explain to these people, like, if somebody accuses a friend of mine of something or whatever, I'll go up to them and ask them, is it true? Before I start launching into attacks on them or anything. And in general, I try not to attack people because, frankly, I have too much positive things to do promoting good people than just attacking negative people. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And not to mention attacking people within the frickin' truth movement. Are you kidding me? There's plenty of frickin' Fed chairman left, last I counted. There's plenty of frickin' prime sinisters and assistant sinisters of health out there who are making their best frickin' leap right now to implement Codex Alimentarius. And you want to start accusing fellow patriots and truthers who are exposing it as frickin' Mossad agents? Are you retarded? We're under attack here! And the enemy's out there, man! He's out there!
Yeah, they're trying to bring Agenda 21 in, which I've questioned several members of our town board and county commission. What do you know about 21? And you get this blank deer eyes and a headlight look.
I have no idea.
Well, I said, the rules you're pushing through are part and parcel of Agenda 21.
That's right, and that's what I said. That's what I said to our local government. Oh, go ahead.
Then I was told politely to shut the F up and sit down.
Hey, well, I didn't get that. What I got when I asked my local government sinister Rodney Hyde about the privatization that was happening in Auckland City. They're amalgamating 9 different separate cities into one mega city with only huge, huge multinational corporations to contract and own all the city assets and to control all those public assets as corporate companies and actually created limited liability companies for $28 billion worth of public assets. Okay? That's what they did. A corporate takeover of $28 billion worth of assets, and this is in a city of 1 million people. Okay? And it's the largest city in New Zealand, which is a country of 4 million people. And they stole everything right out from under us in plain view. The whole public gets real ticked off about it, right? They march in the street, they get real uppity, and they say, we want representation, we're having our democracy taken away from us. And you know what the government sinister tells me? He says, oh, well, I've got no knowledge of Agenda 21, and, you know, I'm surprised if the UN even knows of my existence. See, they laugh it off. When they rip you off. That's what they do. They deny with their mouth what they're doing with their hands. They are perfect psychopaths. And in fact, the American Medical Journal defines a psychopath as somebody who's generally quite friendly and nice when you first meet them, but other than that, doesn't really have any depth to their personality or has long-lasting relationships. Does that sound like any of the employers you've ever had? Or does it sound like all of the employers you've ever had? You know, that's what it is. American Medical Journal also states that the 3 most likely places that you are to find psychopaths, because those psychopathic traits are very, very useful, for example, lying without remorse, politics, politics, media, media, and business, business. What would you say would be the three most core central pillars of the running of society currently today? Would you say that it's business, media, and politics, considering the media tells you who to vote for and what to buy, and the business funds the politicians, so they tell you who to vote for? See? It's a perfect circle. You've got the psychopathic round table. I love it. I don't know about you, but I love living in a socialist psychopathic republic.
But that's the way the whole thing's kind of been hijacked to become. Or it may have always been like that, and we've never noticed.
Well, that's what
what we're trying to do. And we're the flock of black sheep, the meek, who are going to inherit the earth. When they've managed to kill each other, and we just really need to step out of the way and let them hang themselves.
It's not going to happen that way, unfortunately. At least not to my recollection. I interviewed Bob Chapman the other day on my show, and I said, do you reckon the New World Order's planning World War III? And he says, they're already planning it, and it's going to happen. And we're going to win, okay, and there's no doubt in Bob's mind about that. But when you back these beasts into a corner, they're going to destroy almost everything before they get defeated. Okay, that's the reality that we kind of have to face. And if you think of the possibility as I have, that the Fukushima nuclear Daiichi plant wasn't an accident, and all of this grand amounts of contamination all up the West Coast, which Dr. Bill Deagle from GCN is saying has spiked infant deaths by 35%, birth deaths, that kind of thing, and which is interesting because he reports this just after another report saying that prepare to see the first malformed third trimester generation, because it's been a couple of months since the Fukushima disaster, and all the radiation's been affecting all the fetal growth in utero, and so we are now going to expect generations and generations, and this will be pretty much the reality from here on in the Northern Hemisphere at least, where large amounts of deformed or deadly sick children will be born. There'll be a lot of stillbirths and things like that, and incidentally a lot of people will become sterile because of all of this as well. And it's one of these kind of things that makes you sit bolt upright and you think, if, you know, and that's what really hit me, is that now what's happening is simultaneous legislation is being put in place in New Zealand and the US. I'm not sure about UK, but I'm probably sure it's in the works, where they're going to make it basically mandatory to have your baby scanned while they're in the womb with ultrasound, which apparently can be dangerous. I'm not sure of the science on that, but in order to see if it's deformed. And then they tell you that your baby's deformed, and obviously you'll wind up having it terminated. And one thing that I think will probably be a natural progression from that is that they'll make sure that every baby that's detected to have a deformity will be terminated. So what's going to happen? Simultaneously does the fertility rate go down, simultaneously does the birth rate go down, and simultaneously does the government take full control over human birth itself.
We'll be having prenatal chipping as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is not the future, ladies and gentlemen. This is like, I don't know, pretty frickin' soon, as far as I can say.
Already yesterday.
Yeah. the mind reels, because it's just such a terrible disaster. Such a horrible, conflicting cacophony of corruption and crisis, and the average person can't deal with it. And I understand why they can't. It's because they're not a psychopath. Okay, they have feelings, they have emotions. They don't want this kind of thing to be true. Hell, I don't. You know, but you don't see me getting totally miserable and crying and what so much about it, or at least not on the radio anyway. Because, let's face facts here. All of the stuff, while it may be happening, it's all being done to keep you in that fear paradigm, in that paranoia paradigm, okay? What I just told you about Fukushima, while very bad, I can now tell you about the other things. For example, if you want to take chlorella, rosemary, garlic, ginger, ginseng, and a few other nice little things, turmeric, you can flush all the radiation out of your system and you'd be sweet. Okay?
Even. Yeah, not only that, but we have on our station, we've had a regular guest called Shari Edwards. Her work is with sound, and she uses an analysis to she can determine if you're ill, she can determine if you're lying, she can determine what part of your personality you're speaking on, and she can teach how to do this because it's you can observe it using this sound screen that she's built. It's just like a tricorder from Star Trek.
If you go down on my blog page, you will find those links under Shari Edwards.
And she's got a frequency that you can give people to disperse the radiation. I've used frequency personally to disperse arsenic poisoning in a person.
Mm.
We got some answers here.
Well, you know, and again, technology is far in advance of what the media will have you believe. And,
absolutely.
We have people on the show all the time that come up with these amazing freaking inventions, and it all gets suppressed. You know, that's the irritating thing. It either gets suppressed or it's not marketed wide enough, because, I don't know, for some reason, I believe that, again, with the whole three pillars of those psychopathic kind of things, you know how I like talked about replacing the media? Well, the next one on my list is business, okay? And then I want to replace politics. Now, here's how you replace business. Currently, business is run on a singular model, the profit model. Now, that basically allows itself to weed out anybody who's not a psychopath, okay? So you have to then get rid of just the profit model, and you have to add on extra tiers to that to weed out psychopaths. For example, you have to have empathy with your products. It has to actually do something good for the person. It can't rip them off. It has to be of good value and long-lasting, okay? It has to have quality. All right, and it doesn't have to be very expensive in order to have quality, and it can't be poisonous. Okay, it can't be dangerous or faulty or any of that kind of stuff. Quality, that's what it's about. Secondly, damage. If you're doing any damage to environment or renewable means or something like that, if the resources that you're extracting are pumping copious quantities of cyanide into the soil, as is done with some gold mining techniques, or if they're cutting down pristine rainforest instead of forest plantations, like we've got here in New Zealand, if they're from non-man-made, easily renewable resources, you obviously don't really want to be using it, because it puts damage on it, and it can't continue on, all right? And this isn't like Agenda 21 sustainability. This is kind of like common sense sustainability, because in reality, the forestry industry wouldn't really exist if they hadn't outlawed frickin' hemp, you know?
Indeed.
And I suppose, you know, that's the outlawing of hemp on the whole is the entire reason why all of our planet is effed up in the first frickin' place anyway.
Yeah, hey, Vinny, I've got an alliteration for you. I know you love alliteration. So how about polluter pays?
Polluter pays. Yeah, I suppose. But more like somebody would have to not want to pollute in the first place of their own accord via their business model rather than being punished for it. Because as we all know, criminalization doesn't frickin' work, does it? You can only create a different system that evolves past the existing one and makes it obsolete. Now, here's the next stage of the plan on the business front. After you've got ethical, honest business people who create products that are good, that that don't damage anybody and treat all their staff real well, that kind of thing, then you have an elite group of businesses. All of those businesses should then lock arms, okay, give free promotion to each other. You know how businesses don't like to promote each other? They should form an ethical business network that freely promote each other all on their own websites and everything like that, so that there's this full spectrum. So you can go to any one of these websites and you'll find all of those same people anyway. So it creates a massive amount more audience and more economic sales power to those ethical organizations. And then they operate under the model of boycotting and trying to undermine all of the globalist-owned organizations. And they vow to support each other, like if somebody's being attacked or whatever, they come in and they express their support and they campaign on their behalf or make donations, that kind of thing. It's part of what I call the tactic of the cactus. Cactus protects itself by being covered from every direction with spines. So if anything touches it, they're going to get pricked. And that's what the human race, the patriot movement, in every single nation has really become, in my opinion, just another spine on the cactus that the globalists have to suffer if they want to try and take our countries off us. Okay? That's what I think all business should really be about. Some people focus on total rapid expansion. Mine is on redundancy. All right, and let me explain what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, but go on. Yeah,
I start a business, right? And let's say it's my my television show. Now, at the moment, I have to invest a lot of time in that television show. For example, I have to go out and shoot the footage. I have to go out and find the activists. I have to email. I have to call. I have to coordinate. I have to produce it. I have to make the music. I have to do this, and so on and so forth. So it absorbs an immense amount of my time, which I'm happy to do. But if I had to continue spending that kind of amount of that time forever, I'd never get anywhere. I'd only be making TV shows. So I build some redundancy into the system. I find somebody who's just as good as me at doing some music, and I give that responsibility to them. And it's only a small responsibility, so they don't have much of a problem doing it. Cool. Then we have the other possibility of going out and filming. Find another person, give that responsibility to them. And before I know it, I'm almost out of the picture, and I've gotten a group of people together to make a really good TV show all by themselves without me. And I become redundant so that I can go and do some other stuff. It's all about automation. And all those people that come in and actually start making that TV show themselves, they should operate on that same principle as well, of how they can actually get all this done automatically to the point where, hey, it practically doesn't even need doing, and we're automatically screwing over the New World Order without even lifting a finger.
And that's a good model.
Yeah. And because nobody wants to frickin' work, and everybody's, yeah. Everybody's got to eat. So what you
and gotta, everybody loves doing things.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody likes doing the same thing forever. Okay, so this is a good business model because that way it ensures progression of everybody, because the whole idea of getting into that is learning how to do it so well that you can learn how to teach somebody else how to do it. And it's about fostering other people kind of thing. Kind of like elders in our society used to be respected, and we used to have people who mentored us, and kind of like Rebecca has been for you guys and Dave. Oh, and I think that what's really important here is the breakdown of the family unit, and the whole spirit of elders and mentorship has kind of disappeared. And as a result, a lot of knowledge has been lost. And I think that it's a new age, and we've got the information age that is firmly within the grasp of the young, but all the information itself is firmly within the grasp of the old. And it's only through partnership that those two can come together and work. Okay, that's what society is supposed to be about. It's not about competition, it's about collaboration. Human beings accomplish a hell of a lot more when they work together than when they're fighting amongst each other trying to work out who's number one honcho. There can only be one person with a gold medal, or you could get a whole bunch of people together to dig for some more gold. You know, make your choice. You can enrich everybody, or you can make everybody poor and give it all to one guy.
Absolutely. Well, we have things like that here. And what you've been talking about involving the elders, we realized we have a thing called a LET system. Have you heard of LET systems, Vinny?
No.
Local exchange token system.
Kind of like an alternative currency within your local community.
Yeah,
We've got a few towns in New Zealand that have branched off from main city centres and are running their own currencies here, just in their own local township, that kind of thing. So yeah. I'm familiar with that.
It's the kind of people that do that who will be more interested in doing in having ethical businesses.
Well, no, I think everybody at their core, everybody who's a good person is interested in doing an ethical business. And it's funny, when you look, you find them, because they're absolutely everywhere. And in the alternative health field, for example, every single person that I've met, bar maybe one or two, has been really, really top-notch, nice people who have incredibly successful businesses, lots of creativity, great products at a reasonable price. So all you got to do is just bring those good people out to the forefront. Like in my radio show, with the media side of things, I'm bringing the good information out. In the business side of things, you've got to bring the good business practice and the good products out. Now, thirdly, we've got to have politics. Now, how do you replace a government in a similar way to replacing the media and a thing? You've got to start your own, essentially, and just build it up from scratch again, okay? And my thoughts is that the only way to really replace a government and put it in the hands of the people is with open source software. Kind of like how anybody who puts a blog on a website can have any range of comments, and people can vote it up or down, or they can even sign in like they can on Wikipedia and change things or whatever. Now imagine what if there was a Wikipedia for government legislation. If people came together in a room, and anybody in the country could participate in these chat rooms and whatever, and they could sit there and hash out legislation together. And that way, the parliamentarians who get elected to represent them don't get a say in the matter, but ultimately it's the people that make the legislation up and pass it themselves. And again, kind of similar to the business model, you make the politicians redundant. And so eventually, you wouldn't even have much need for a government, and on the street, you'd only really need your general civil servants, for example, policemen, just in case somebody gets violent or out of hand, or if there's theft, things of a rudimentary nature that imply common law has been breached, i.e. damage to somebody's personal property or kidnapping. And you'd have in possibly council officers, local government councils, for example, who would figure out how to keep the roads in order and plan for transportation projects. Other than that, major government and central government would really have not much need for its existence anymore, because it would be totally redundant. And the only thing that would matter would be the people directly around you and in your communities, and totally sustaining yourselves without damaging everything.
That is the world we're shooting for.
And so, that's what we need to focus on.
That's what we had, more or
but
less.
But we can do it, and we're doing it now. I mean, it is happening.
No. Well, this is a very interesting thought, though. In the end, end of the day, if a thought becomes old enough and people forget about it, when it comes back, apparently it becomes a revolutionary thought. All right? What we're talking about is not revolutionary at all. If anything, it's conservative. It's old school. It's just applying new technological processes and perhaps new vocabulary to it. Probably less vocabulary, come to think of it. Apparently, if you try to read older books by authors like Charles Dickens, for example, they're very difficult to read because they use a whole lot of words that we just don't use in our language anymore. It's because everybody's vocabulary has shrunken so much, and everybody's just that much freaking dumber.
Indubitably.
Mm-hmm. And
why don't we all take a short break? and let JP play some music.
What do you want, Dave?
Something cool.
Something cool. Yeah.
How about that, Vinny?
I'm all in favor of coolness.
Meanwhile, back on the air, here's Vinny Eastwood versus Dave Corso. Seconds up, round two.
In the blue speedos, back, Dave. In the...
I don't wear speedos.
You don't?
Even though I'm... Nope.
Oh, come on. You were in the intelligence service. I thought all those guys wore speedos.
Nah, I wear boxer briefs.
Oh, okay. Keep them free, keep them clean, I'll say. You know.
There you go. And we were during the break, we were talking about many things. And Vinny's a 1-2-3 with his raise, and Jeremy's going to take a minute and explain to Vinny what that is.
I keep talking. I just took a mouthful of raisins for God's sake.
I was really old to get eating my raisins.
I just thought I'd have a little snack, you know, because I've been doing all this stuff during the break. So I thought I'll take a little break, let Dave and Vinny start talking, you know, get some animation going. And no, he talks to me. He talks to me. He says, "Explain what 1-2-3 means."
Yeah, just put you on the right. Spot like that, eh? You bastard, Dave. What a ruthless bastard.
Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
But anyway, there you go. So what it is, it's this stuff, right? I met this guy a long time ago. He taught me the rays. And the rays are it's like it brings everything in the universe together. Because you're a musician, aren't you?
Me?
Yeah. Didn't you say you're a musician?
I sing and I make songs, and
right.
I'm basically okay. I'm kind of like the Kim Jong Il of the truth movement, you know, the multi talented. Oh, hello.
So anyway, the whole universe is based on music.
Complete rearrange.
At least he can sing. I sound like a bullfrog with laryngitis.
A bullfrog with laryngitis. That's a really good description. I mean, you do have this kind of a pebbles over a stream type rustic rasp to it, you know?
Thank you.
he gets the girls.
I took speech classes in college to learn how to speak without the Western Pennsylvania twang speaking through my nostrils.
Well, we're all ashamed of where we come from and our terrible accents. And in New Zealand, for example, we have people who pronounce the word New Zealand as New Zealand. Yeah, because New Zealand is... It's kind of like we've manifested a way of having a language that involves no movement of the lower jaw. Like, for example... For example, welcome to New Zealand. We're going to go and take you to a tour out in the rural district. You know, it's just kind of this elongated sort of drawl sort of thing, which is interesting, you know. And some people in New Zealand, they say, "Oh, Vinny, are you from America?" And it's like, "No, man, I was freaking born and raised here. What were you, raised under a tarpaulin and under a hole in the ground or something?" You know, half of them say yes, but... because
yes, indeed, I was. Yeah. But they say they. Oh, sorry.
New Zealand's kind of third world. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there's people up in the north in Northland, you know, just north of Auckland, who still don't have electricity or phones, and there's so much disrepair in this country. A large percentage of the houses don't even have so much as insulation in the walls. No frickin' double glazing. Like, for example, in Canada, it is a requirement by law to build your houses with insulation and double glazing. Because otherwise, you wind up with ridiculously cold homes and people are getting sick all the time. And so in New Zealand, we have a large number of deaths every year. I think it might have been like 300 or 3,000 or something ridiculous amount of deaths in New Zealand just because of the cold. People are dying in their crappy old Scottish built homes. No offense to the Scots, but
no, it's just like that in Scotland as well.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, I remember I was talking with Vincent from TNS Radio in Ireland when he used to live in Scotland one time. I think it might have been him that told me this. I forget, but somebody told me that they were going to the bathroom in Scotland and they unzipped and they looked down and the toilet bowl was the water was frozen.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah, that's normal. Doesn't it freeze in your toilet?
yeah, it's like,
suppose I live in a bit of a second world country, really.
Well, in Dunedin, it was kind of different. Like, I'd go to sleep wearing two pairs of socks, undergarments, like, for example, long johns, and then pants over that, track pants, and then jeans over that. And two t-shirts, a jacket, and a sweater, and a beanie, and a scarf, and with three duvets on top of me, and a mink blanket on top of that, and that was kind of warm. And when I woke up in the morning, there's a layer of condensation on the top of the mink blanket, so you have to wipe off the water off the top of your blanket every morning. And the wallpaper was starting to come off because in the morning there was condensation all over the wallpaper as well. Like you could probably squeeze, I don't know, like a bucket's worth of water off the walls in one room in a day kind of thing. It was thick. It was right there. It was pretty obvious. And I watched my olive oil in the kitchen freeze at room temperature. But it was interesting because Scottish houses aren't designed to insulate heat, as it turns out.
It was on
average 5 degrees colder inside than it was outside, according to the thermometer reading on my watch when I tested it. And one night we left the fridge door open by accident, and we woke up and the next morning went, man, it's really nice and warm in here. I'm not kidding. And then the next night, I thought I'd try an experiment, and we left the elements on the stove top and the oven door open and all of that kind of stuff to run all night to see if that would heat the house. But no, we woke up, it was freezing, mate. Yep. It was unbelievable. It was even colder than before. And the mold in the bathroom was so bad that we had to, you know, call the landlord and say, mate, you know, we need a dehumidifier in here. This stuff's just out of control. It's coming through the wallpaper. And he said, oh, no, you're just complaining about something. And the landlord just lived across the road. So, you know, we just asked him to come on over and take a look. And, you know, sure enough, he came over 6 months later. And he proceeded to tell us how we were all just complaining about nothing or whatever. And he just, you know, was like, oh, there's nothing wrong here. And he ripped off a chunk of the new paint, you know, that had gone over the wall, nothing behind it but black Mercer mold, and he goes, oh, okay, I'll get you a dryer. So we got a dryer, and we spent most of the winter huddled next to it because there was only one PowerPoint left in the house, actually. I mean, each massive room had only one power plug, and we couldn't afford any extra, like, extension leads or anything like that to put the dryer in one of our rooms to keep it warm kind of thing. So we managed to close off all the doors in the hallway. And that was collectively a much smaller space to heat than any one of our rooms was. So we'd just bring out a small chair or whatever just to sit next to the heater wrapped in... the dryer, sorry. When we were drying our clothes kind of thing, we'd just make sure that we were sitting next to the dryer to stay warm wrapped in a sleeping bag. And you know, it was cool, man. It was fun times in Dunedin. $2 pints on Wednesdays, and $2 double shots on Tuesdays, and lots and lots of incredibly pretty young 25% of the whole population is students. Food's incredibly cheap, and we had three bedroom house that had at least, I don't know, probably about maybe twice or three times the size of a normal bedroom size there for $190 a week. Okay, so it may have been harsh living, but it's incredibly cheap. And that's,
you get what you pay for, right?
Precisely, precisely. So you got nobody to blame but yourself.
Did you see what Mad Hatter put in the chat room?
Oh,
he said, "I'm sure it was that cold, Benny, and I used to sell weed to Jimi Hendrix."
Oh yeah. Oh, trust me, but our house, it wasn't actually that cold per se. It was more just the position of our house, because we got about maybe 30 minutes of sunshine a day, and that was between 10 o'clock in the morning and 10:30 in the morning when the sun was at its weakest, because the sun actually rose at 10 a.m. So we got the first 30 minutes of sunshine directly for the rest of the day, but all the rest of it we spent in shadow. It snowed once while I was down there, and I think it might have been 3, 4, might have even been up to 6 months later, there was still snow on our lawn, because it had not melted. That's the position of the house I was in, you know, and it's like coldness is conditional, you know, because I moved to another flat the other time. I turned my heater on for 30 minutes to keep the room warm for 4 hours, and there was plenty of all-day sunshine, that kind of thing. You know, make sure that when you go to live somewhere, that's what it really taught me. If you're going to go live somewhere, either make sure that it's very, very well insulated and it's easy to heat or whatever, or it gets all-day sun. Okay, because staying warm is the most important thing in life, as far as I'm concerned. I hate the cold. I really do. And for obvious reasons.
Well, I was born and raised in Western Pennsylvania, and we used to get horrific snows up there. And when I was young, I said, when I get older, I'm going to live where there's not going to be snow.
Oh.
Well, my brother conveniently escaped to Tahiti, where he's living there with his wife and two boys, and he loves it. It's like a cold day in Tahiti is like 85 degrees. That's it. You never have to worry about freezing to death, period, because the climate just won't allow you. You can't die of the cold in Tahiti.
Here's the thing.
I mean, unless you accidentally, you know, too little fishing and, you know, wound up falling in the fish ice box on your boat or whatever and got trapped inside there for several hours, then you might die of cold in Tahiti.
Said in the chat room has just said, when I get older, I'm going to live where mosquitoes will not. I've got some sad news for you,
yeah.
Said, because when there's a line where the mosquitoes stop, and from then on, it's midges, which are like very much smaller, invisible, blood-sucking vampire creatures, which you can't even see.
Yeah, yeah.
You just see them as a cloud. I'm not joking. They're like a cloud of these things.
And they hurt when they bite, too. They hurt worse than mosquitoes. And we got
freak.
We got these.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, it's just like, ow, ow, you what got, the hell got is that?
Midges. You got midges in New Zealand.
If yes, man, we call them sandflies.
All right, no-see-ums. Yeah, a little, yeah, oh, indeed.
And there's actually a place in New Zealand called Sandfly Point.
Really?
Exactly.
That's really attractive,
exactly.
Huh?
Because when anybody goes there, they soon find themselves pointing the way the F out of there! You know, to hell with getting sucked to death. You know, I'm sure in a pornographic sense the word wouldn't be too bad a way to go, but...
Don't get me started. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's what she said.
That's right, Seth. There's no mosquitoes in my house.
All right.
But there are flies.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there's nothing new about that. Like, you remember when Al Gore in that movie, that presentation he did, The Inconvenient Truth, he talked about how global warming was affecting these mosquito plagues, blah, 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 blah. Well, it turns out the mosquitoes can come and strike you in a cold climate or a warm climate. It doesn't matter.
Well, you know
they're like a seasonal insect or something. You know? You know, I get less mosquitoes during the winter, but they're still around, you know. And they can even be around, apparently. It might even be when it's icy or whatever. It's like, there's no freaking escape, okay? We live in a constant circular biosphere, and the cost of living is that you have to live with other creatures, okay? That's basically it. Unless, of course, you're human, and you could just exterminate all those other creatures and live in a completely pristine environment that is only contaminated by copious quantities of aluminum and barium.
You get many chemtrails sprayed down there, Vinny?
Chemtrail protest yesterday, bro. First chemtrail protester in New Zealand, as far as I know. But, yeah, it's been supported by a few people. About maybe 7 or so people turned up. A lot of the
bless.
Not bad for 6 days' notice, but it did do the rounds, and hundreds and hundreds of people knew about the protest, but not too many turned up. So we're going to turn that into a YouTube video, as well as a lot of the footage is going to go into one of my new episodes of my TV show called Mr. News. Mr. News means Media Revolution News, because as I referred to earlier, if you want to have a revolution in the mind, you've got to have a revolution in the media to facilitate it. So, you know.
So, what do you think of Rupert Murdoch and the News of the World scandal?
Well, I'm always a fan of the end of the world, but not like this. You know,
not like this.
Yeah. But, to be honest, anything Murdoch does, it's probably some kind of a scam, or corporate takeover, or some kind of psyop, or some kind of distraction. And frankly, it's like, oh, gee whiz, how terrible. Less mainstream news, media, propaganda, who are violating people's privacy and conditioning the public into accepting it. Oh, that's such a freaking shame. I'm so upset about it, you know. I can't express.
I can tell
my anguish.
I can tell.
I'm glad you're not very expressive, Vinny.
Vinny makes his own entertainment. It's brilliant. It's great having you on, Vinny.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that, because last night one of my listeners, who's the who's a deer hunter, right, and he's a very good rifleman, as it turns out. He was sitting there listening to the show that I did with Bob Chapman with me, and he asked me how I felt about it when I'm listening to my show. And my honest response is, man, I crack me up. See, if
I can understand that.
I mean, if you're not having fun, you're doing something wrong, and it's time to change your tune. You know?
Absolutely.
Look at it this way. If I wasn't having fun going out and ambushing banksters and politicians and media personalities on the street and megaphoning and telling people to move swiftly to their next shopping experience, I wouldn't be doing it. Okay? I do it because I love doing it. And you know what? For those very small amount of people that turned up, I only knew one of them, and I got to meet half a dozen new interesting people who all had a very different story about how they woke up, and all had new and interesting ways about how they can contribute to guerrilla media, to the protesting about chemtrails, to the New Zealand alternative media, and some of them gave me donations. All of those people that turned up were of top-notch quality. And this is the thing.
Excellent.
You do not need the quantity. All you need is the quality, and preferably a video to put it up on YouTube so that it becomes seen thousands of times, okay? And that's worth 1,000 people turning up to the protest anyway.
A handycam is the weapon of the future.
Well, you know how they say...
Oh, well, the weapon of now.
They know how... they say that the pen is mightier than the sword. I say that the camera is the camera is mightier than the pen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and this comes into the whole media revolution aspect of it. We are winning the war on information, okay? And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening into this and you don't believe me that there's a war on information, tell me why so many people are dying of cancer every freaking year, and there's always a freaking news story about some new cancer cure that comes up, but the cancer cure never comes up. How do you think that all these politicians who keep campaigning on a platform of change never change anything without the media reporting it? Okay?
The only thing they change is how they can put more money in their pocket.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those self-evident truths that if you are a believer in the goodness of government, then you are being deceived. And that's why I believe Barack Obama should change his campaign to change you can deceive him.
He's donut already.
Well, you know, it's in practice. But other than that, another good campaign slogan is change you can beg for in the street. Because that's what you're going to have to wind up doing after four more years of President BS. Barry Satoru is his name. Interesting, yep. His initials are BS. I find that that's a common trait among politicians, though. And I watched an interesting video today about a guy, I forget what his name is. But he's explaining psychopaths, and the reason why they're able to get into politics and the reason why they're so good at it is because they love themselves. They love being in front of the camera. They love talking to people, and they love manipulating people. And if you look up the definition of manipulation and you look up the definition of leadership, they're virtually the same thing. It's influencing people to do something that they wouldn't ordinarily do of their own accord. All right? I can lead people in a protest as I did yesterday, and be the one on the megaphone, the one dressed up in the big scary paintball mask, and the one who helped to organise to get the whole thing together, made the Facebook up and whatever. But without the people who donated that megaphone, without the people who made that banner, without the people who donated money so that we could buy all these materials, nothing would have happened. Okay, it's like we're all part of this indivisible whole, as I see it. And quite frankly, we've got enough dividing us already. And I was accused of being COINTELPRO for calling for a little bit of unity within the truth movement. Like, because
who said that?
That was Jane Burgermeister.
Burgermeister accused you?
Yes.
Hmm.
Now, I love Jane, and I still support her, and I've made videos with her in, and I've had her on my radio show, and I've gone out to protest with Penny Bright, local activist here in New Zealand, with big banners about the swine flu scam and free Jane Burgermeister and all of that kind of stuff. And I send one email to her about, you know, calling for a little bit of unity and not having much stopping the infighting. Because, you know, a few people were, like, giving Jane a bit of crap last year sort of thing. And, you know, she just kind of blew up at me. And I started to understand that often when you become embroiled in the whole New World Order thing and you understand what COINTELPRO and all of that kind of stuff is, it means that suddenly everybody's under suspicion. And that means that you become paranoid because you don't know who you can trust anymore, because a single phrase or a gesture or something can set off a whole chain of events in your mind. And I think this is not entirely different to a lot of the attacks that many Patriot Talk radio hosts and filmmakers and whatnot experience on behalf of people in their own movement. And it's not entirely different from what happens with family members. You know, it's,
well, exactly.
It's the same thing.
It's all manipulation by emotions.
Yeah, yeah. And I've just, for me, I don't want to hate anybody, and I don't want to be hated on. So if you want to, you know, talk to me at any point, you know, you can email me through the website. I'll send you my Skype info, and, you know, I'll have a talk to you. And I frequently have hour-long conversations with people who've listened to my show before, just to have a conversation with them, because, you know, that's what you should really do if you want to be able to represent people, is you need to frickin' talk to them and listen to them and do so a lot, okay? Otherwise, you will lose touch. That's what happens to all these people that go into politics thinking that they're going to do the right thing. That's what happens to all these policemen who go into the business thinking they're doing the right thing. Same with the doctors, same with the lawyers. All those people that are in positions of trust and responsibility are getting jobs in an industry of death that basically, essentially, has brainwashed them into thinking that doing the wrong thing is the right thing. And because they don't, and that all the people that they're trying to be protecting are the enemy. So they stop listening to all those people that they're supposed to be protecting, and they start oppressing them and thinking that that's good, because they're told that it's good, repeatedly. Okay? That's just insane. And anybody with any rational thought left in their frickin' noggin can see that our society has gone completely and utterly insane. And it's not the people that are on the street corners with megaphones that are going absolutely nuts at the top of their voice, screaming out, they're killing us, that are the crazy ones. It's the people that walk by and don't listen that are freaking out of their mind.
It's the bank managers.
You know, it's interesting. This show today is really setting the platform for Gwen Caldwell's show next week.
What, how is that? Well, who's Glenn Caldwell?
She's a remarkable lady who has a blog she puts up. Just a moment, let me find it.
It's on your blog there, Dave, underneath the chat room.
Oh. Now there's one of her blogs down below.
But anyway, paraphrase, because this is talk radio and we have a listening audience here, guys.
Yes, yeah, that's not some reading on the air. Live reading on the air.
Yeah. Well, you know, also another thing, I'll just take the opportunity to give a good quick plug to myself, because I believe there's nothing shameful about shameless self-promotion. If you go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, that's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. You have to do the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. We've got to get those other things like Vinny Eastwood and Vinny Eastwood Show and blah, blah, blah. I haven't bought them up yet. I don't know. Maybe we're just... it's a work in progress. Give me a break here. But anyway, if you go to the featured interviews page, which I'm pretty sure y'all might like, particularly those in the chat room here, you'll be able to see all these big, hardcore top patriots. Like, we've got George Norrie, Webster Tarpley, J. Edward Griffin, Jason Burmis, Steve Quayle, Stuart and Janet Swerdlow, Len Horowitz and Sherry Kane, Rick Simpson, Stan Deo, Cindy Sheehan, Ian Wishart, Paul Connett, John Truman Wolf, Michael Murphy, Dr. Tim Ball, Michael Shaw, Lorraine Murray, Benjamin Fulford, and many, many more, including a lot of really top Kiwi activists down here as well. We've got Tame Iti, who was one of the bunches of people who were arrested in a huge terror raid down here. And by terror raid, I mean they basically surveilled an entire community of people, about 2,000 people, full-time, for like the best part of a year or so, just waiting for somebody to say the wrong thing so that they could come in there. And, you know, they busted in, they smashed them all down, they pointed laser-targeted pointers at Māori elders and children and all of this kind of stuff with their black uniforms, scared the hell out of everybody. And now the judges are so freaking corrupt, they're saying, oh, well, these people can't have a jury trial, okay? We have to make sure that all the evidence is presented to the public in a proper way. In a proper way, in a properly deceiving way, more like it, because the person who did try to expose the fact that these terror raids were all done with illegal warrants is currently going to be sent to jail for exposing that in the press. His name is Vince Seymour. from kiwisfirst.co.nz. He's also on this page here, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com featured interviews. You know, it's like when you have a look, if you really, really look at all the people that are winding up getting their themselves thrown in jail and stuff like that, go and talk to these people. Ask them, you know, what's going on here? And you'll be surprised that most of the time they're incredibly eloquent and they just keep laying copious amounts of information out to you. And you think to yourself, man, that conversation should have been recorded. And I figured that out a long time ago. That's why I do record those conversations now and publish them on YouTube for everybody to be part of the conversation. You got to take that thing. But I've got a terrible memory as well, so it helps if things are captured on film.
Yeah, me too. It's I think they call it being in the moment, because you might say you've got a terrible memory, but you can reel off facts and statistics like anyone, can't you?
Well, yeah, exactly. But there'll be specific instances of places and some information I do get wrong, and that's why I operate under that assumption that I'm probably wrong about a lot of things, you know. And by all means, don't believe me. If I say something, don't believe it. Research it for yourself. And if it turns out that what I've said isn't true, then please tell me about it so that I can continue to not be so that I can correct myself. You know,
yeah.
When you get something wrong, people accuse you of COINTELPRO first, instead of just saying, "Hey, Vinny, it's actually this," and then me going, "Oh, okay, thanks," and then retracting myself. You know, that's what a responsible journalist is supposed to do. And I, bear in mind, I have no journalism training whatsoever, and I don't believe in actually needing any form of journalism training, because let's face it, this whole world's run by professionals, isn't it? How's that working?
Yeah, the trained ones are not doing too well, are they? No.
Exactly. That's the reason why they're trained, and that's the reason why they wear cuffs. That's the reason why they wear collars. Okay. Because they're just a bunch of rollover for me to get your little treat, your little trip to the Bahamas for the summer vacation, your new Gucci bag, or your new Fukushima Daiichi baby. You know. Oh, yeah. Fukushima Daiichi pet. There we go. That'll be the newest little electronic game for the kids.
What, three heads.
Yeah. Like a fish that's like the size of Godzilla that you keep in your paddling pool in the backyard, you know, with your kids and whatever, you know, and the kids will be like just playing this little handheld game or whatever. You're like, it's a bit scary, you know? Well, yeah, some gargantuan freaking Komodo dragon pet somehow worming its way into your family situation. I don't know. I don't know how this whole childless existence seems to pan out for people, right? Because there's so many people out there, and I meet them all the time, that don't want kids. That don't like kids, don't like the process of answering children's questions, helping them learn, learn how to do things. I looked after autistic boys, right? I took over from a girl who looked after them for a good year, okay? When I met this boy, he couldn't really speak more than two or three words. And he couldn't, he would spit, he would bite, he would throw things at you, that kind of thing. Violence and all of that. And it turns out that the girl who I took over from had basically, instead of taking care of him, had just sat back and doodled in her little scrapbook most of the time and collected her paycheck and gone home. And the facility where she was doing that in was with other people. Nobody called her on it because they all did the same thing as well. None of these people that were in the children's care centre actually cared about the children. And I was
they get this uncaring culture.
I was the only person working there that really, really cared about those kids enough to actually go out of my way and put myself out there. You know, and I'm a big guy, and I'm creative as well. So I came up with this idea of indoor skiing. Now, we had a big auditorium and with kind of slippery floors. So what you do is you get the kids out of their shoes, just on their socks, and then you grab a rope, okay? And then you can, if you tie it properly, you can fit it into a harness so that it comes across your chest and around your shoulders. My dad was a scout captain, And then you've got these two ends of the rope tailing out behind you. So the kids grab onto that, and you've got this harness on, and then you just drag them around on the floor, and they do some indoor skiing.
And you know, and I bet you got the sack.
that's exactly right. I mean, well they told me, you know, the rope's not meant to be used for that, so put it away.
Health and safety.
And it's like, man,
wine. You gave them a good time.
We're having a hell of a lot of fun, and teaching them how to tie the knots as well, and teaching them about speed and how, what's safe, what not, how to corner, how to control themselves, that kind of thing. Just teaching them simple things in their own physical world through a fun exercise. And I was looked down upon. Okay. You know, and that's what people are turned into. They've turned into these anti-fathering type society, and there's huge statistical evidence to support this claim here that the father is more or less being annihilated and replaced by the state. That's all these people are afraid of. Kids aren't allowed to climb trees no more. Yeah.
Oh. The same thing is happening here.
Well, yeah, that's why they call it a new world order, because there's no frickin' escape for it. What country do you think is exempt from that phrase? You know, people forget this. They think, oh, well, it can't happen here. That's what a lot of New Zealanders are like, you know. It's like, oh, all that stuff's happening in America. They've seen Alex Jones' film. They know what's going on. They know it's a new world order. But because they don't actually look around in their own frickin' community to see all those globalist fingerprints all over their own politicians and their own corrupt organizations, their own businesses and all their own shareholders, all of that kind of stuff, they always look outwards and they don't look inwards. And I can tell you, all the time, most of the times, all the problems in your lives are caused and almost entirely by yourself, okay? The rest of it is just you being naive and other people taking advantage of you, okay? If you have a common sense and creativity, you wouldn't be working for anybody else for a lot of your life, okay? You'd be trying to create your own source of income. But that's a real challenging prospect, and it does take a lot of commitment, and you need a lot of support in order to get that kind of thing done. I would literally not be able to do what I'm doing today without the support of my my lovely girlfriend Sarah, I'm going to be married to at the end of this year, and I would not be able to do it without my somewhat fabulous producer, Mr. Mitch Santel, who I can tell you guys is the best producer in the radio game today. All right, I'm not kidding you, and you can't have him. He's mine. You know, and I've got Danny Romero as well, who used to be associated with Alex Jones. There was some kind of a big falling out, but you'll have to ask Danny about that at American Freedom Radio. And so I've got a big radio show. It's on many, many platforms, real radio stations and internet, and I've got a TV show, and I've got a YouTube channel that has more subscribers than the local New Zealand mainstream music channel YouTube ones, okay? You know, all of those big music channels that they've got on TV here, they've got their own YouTube channels as well, and I've got way more hits and way more subscribers than them, okay? You know why? Because truthers and patriots all over the world have the exact same audience, okay? Free-thinking people. And there aren't a ridiculously large amount of them, but they are an incredibly interesting audience nonetheless. For example, what's happened to Charlie Veach the second that he postulated that 9/11 was not an inside job? Boom. It was like he dropped an atom bomb on himself, because patriots and truthers do have a lot invested in the truth movement, okay? Because they've based a lot of
Art Bell.
Around it, and it's like, and I can understand totally the reaction, because quite frankly, it was sort of like, what the hell? To me, when I just watched a video about it today, And my theory is that Charlie's done what happens to most naive young people when they get given an opportunity to fly over to a brand new place and talk to all these amazing experts with these huge qualifications and all of that kind of stuff, that you get swept up in the whole experience and you start believing it. That these people aren't just in the employ of the state, and that these positions can't be compromised, and that kind of thing. And sure enough, these vacant, nonsensical retorts seem to come out of a lot of these 9/11 conspiracy deniers. But you know, I don't blame Charlie at all, and quite frankly, I think that he was never really part of the 9/11 truth movement to begin with. He was just doing his own thing, doing the Love Police. And I just want to say, just like that Britney Spears fan, leave Charlie alone!
Vinny.
Yeah.
Do you know Art Bell?
No, but I have a picture of my somewhat fabulous producer with Art Bell.
Well, Art Bell lives here in Pahrump when he's here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And he, when he's doing his radio show one night, he made a statement that anyone who didn't believe the government's version of 911 were wing nuts. So I sent him a fast blast because he knows who I am. I know him personally. I said, well, call me Colonel Wingnut. I says, because your statement just proves to me you're nothing more than a government shill.
Well, I think it's more like we all have these kind of varying layers of psychosis and naivete and brainwashing that's kind of caked on us, right? I think that you're kind of caramelized onion from birth, so to speak. You know, there's all these layers, but they're all mixed up and they're all embroiled in this topical sludge. So what's happening is everybody's kind of waking up to some truths at some times, and they'll disagree with you on other points at other times. And so my response to that is not to get angry with them or accuse them of something, because I'd need to have some real solid evidence to really accuse somebody of being in the employ of an agency or something like that. Lynn Horowitz and Sherry Kane, for example, they are brilliant at doing that, of exposing agents within the truth movement. They've just broken a story that Ted Gunderson was, I think, married to the daughter of the creator of the Temple of Set. You know, they found this love letter, and it's kind of unequivocal when you get evidence like that. And you need evidence like that when you want to point a finger at somebody in the truth movement, I believe, because otherwise it becomes part of the disinformation, even if it's a genuine accusation, like you're a Zionist shell because they talk good about Israel and say that anybody who thinks that Jews run the world should have a toaster thrown in their bathtub, like Jason Boomer said to somebody on the Info Warrior, okay? As far as I'm concerned, I don't want to take partisanship with any one particular person or whatever. I just basically don't want to be abused, and I want to have a nice, fun show where we get to have laughs and all of that about amusing things like genocide and psychopathy. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong
Nothing,
with that at all.
Not a thing.
you're a soul brother of ours, I tell you. You really are, though.
Oh, man.
So
everybody's got to do their part, eh? And I think the cool thing about speaking English really is that it has this kind of wide appeal, because you know I can talk to limey bastards and Americans and Canucks and the Aussies and most of the European states and countries all over the world have big English speaking populations as well, because it's become the internationalist language of business. And so that's where a lot of the educated people are with their speaking is in English. So that's a good thing about having this broad base appeal, and
it's a good thing.
So many people can collaborate, so many people can contribute, and you don't have any of that translation or language barrier or whatever. But you know, I suppose I don't want that kind of one world religion. We're all one people. Blah 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 blah. Kind of crap. I don't think so. I think total national sovereignty. Everybody needs their opinions to be heard and be able to dictate what they do in their own life, and nobody should be able to dictate what anybody else does in their life. That's basic as it boils down to it. Because if you don't have a choice of what you do in your life, or your choices are restricted by somebody else, that's not freedom. It simply is not. And I want to eradicate all of that kind of stuff. Because I was given so much choice in my life, and now because I've made the decision to go out there and start doing what I'm doing now, to do for New Zealand what, say, George Nouri and Alex Jones have done for America in terms of getting out video and radio and publications and going through across many different mediums. Because I did that, now other people are doing it. For example, there's a big rumour about this major HAARP facility in the South Island, just outside of the earthquake-ridden city of Christchurch. Nobody had gone out and taken pictures of it. One guy calls me up after listening to my show, and he says, "Hey man, I live 15 minutes from that facility." I have a conversation with the guy, and then within an hour of that conversation, he's back, and he and I've given him contributor status, and he's got the article posted on Guerrilla Media with dozens of photographs of this huge, huge, massive, stretching on into the freaking distance antenna array. Okay? And I just got a call from my good friend John Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, who's got a reasonably wide distribution here in New Zealand, and he wants to run his article. Okay? And he was thanking me, right? You know, thank you, Vinny, for giving me the opportunity to do this. And I said, no, mate. Don't thank me. I didn't go out there and take those pictures. I didn't write those articles. I didn't put them up online. You did. You and only you. There have been rumors circulating about this facility since the September quake last year. And one guy went out and finally frickin' did it. And the credit is due solely to him. That's what people have to realize, is it doesn't take you long to have accomplished something incredibly great. Because there's a hell of a lot of stuff that nobody's done yet. And you can be that person. It could just be a matter of where you are at this very moment. Is there some kind of globalist in your area right now? Is there some kind of person engaging in scumbaggery in your town hall right now? There probably is. In fact, we were talking about Agenda 21 earlier on in the piece. Did you know that Hamilton City Council, one of the largest cities in New Zealand, has their own Agenda 21 office? And they are now recruiting Greenpeace to hand out Agenda 21 leaflets. And it's actually written down as Agenda 21. Our mayor of Auckland, the new super city, how I mentioned before, how they're taking $28 billion of assets and putting it under corporate control. Our new mayor has been praised by one of the so-called activist grassroots movements as being a great mayor because he embodies the eco-city model, which is modelled after Agenda 21. Okay? All of this stuff is right there in your face. And the only reason why I know all of these different pieces of information is because somebody in those locations did about 15 to 20 minutes of work. And now I can report that to people, to all the ears that might listen to this broadcast. And now you know, simply because one person somewhere decided to take one tiny bit of initiative, no matter what day it is, no matter what time it is, everybody who chooses to wake up has woken up at the exact right time for them. And I kind of want to thank all the people that have been listening to my show and listening to this show as well, and you guys for inviting me on, because I always say in my life that all the best things in my life have been given to me. My father, before he died, back when the oil cano crisis was happening in the Gulf of Mexico, I just sat bolt upright and I said, "Frickin' heck, this oil cano crisis is so dang huge. I can't I can't sit on the sidelines anymore. I have to really start my media company. I have to quit. I have to quit my job looking after these autistic boys, and I have to do it. And so the only way I could think of doing it was just calling my dad and saying, you know, Dad, I need $5,000-$10,000 or whatever, you know. He gave it to me. You know, it just gave it to me. All of these things. People are just coming out of the woodwork to support me, and I don't know whether or not their faith is misplaced, but I constantly want to see myself as the bad guy.